Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for checking out the show this morning. Like you just heard, we're going to spend today, and I'm sure quite some time, talking about everything that we've seen this weekend, talking to some people who can add some perspective to what we've seen this weekend, including Dr. Harry Edwards, who's scheduled to join us here coming up in just a little bit. And guys, it was a tough weekend. I mean, it was emotional, it was scary, it was angry. It was all of these things. And here we are the next morning and looking at the TV all over again. And it's still as raw as it was yesterday, last week. It's not getting any better, at least not yet.
No, it's not. But I would say, Travis, you know, this has been building a little bit before that. You know, I know that, you know, it's Mr. Floyd's name that's being chanted predominantly right now. But you got to start back a couple of, you know, like a week or so prior, and what we witnessed with Ahmaud Arbery down in Georgia. Brothers going for a jog, gets hunted down, gunned down, and by two white men. And they don't arrest anybody until the video comes out. So we were dealing with that. Remember, before Mr. Floyd's had his fatal encounter with police officers. So what you're witnessing right now isn't just strictly something that just transpired, you know, in the last couple of days. This is the building, you know, Breonna Taylor. You know, they broke into her house and just shot her, killed her. Right? So these things were prior to Floyd. So when Mr. Floyd died, we just exploded.
As promised, we are joined right now by Dr. Harry Edwards, who is a professor emeritus of sociology at Cal Berkeley. Dr. Edwards, thanks for coming on this morning. How are you?
I'm doing not doing as well as I expected, but I'm doing better than I deserve, so I guess I'm cool.
Dr. Edwards, you obviously have seen every single one of these riots from the 60s to the 90s, the Rodney King LA riots, to now where we are today. What are the differences outside there hasn't been any change in what we've been trying to get done for so long?
Well, I'm still not convinced there's going to be substantive change in the wake of this. I mean, I watched, I watched 20 young white kids get shot down at Sandy Hook. Of course, we didn't catch it on video, but we most certainly were aware of what happened. And I saw absolutely no change in terms of gun laws, in terms of the madness of assault-type battlefield weapons and the hands of private citizens. So I'm still skeptical of exactly and precisely the depth and scope of any change that is being demanded. I think that the key is for everybody to stay on it. Don't let this one fade away with the next news cycle. And I think one of the things, two things that give me hope in that regard is, one, this thing, we have 104,000 people dead as a result of this pandemic. But the televised primetime in living color lynching of a black man under cover of badge pushed all of that out of the news cycle. The second thing is the social media. When I was organizing the Olympic Project for Human Rights, in part in protest of police violence against black men, women, and children in this country, in 1968, I had to get on a rotary phone, dial 100 people, hope that I'm around when 50 of them call back because there was no voicemail, and hope that at least 20 of them wouldn't think I was totally insane and that 5 of them would be willing to stand up and do something. Today, you can get on the social media and hit the single most powerful word ever coined in the English language, S-E-N-D, and all of a sudden it goes out to literally millions of people. So you can call a rally, you can surround a police station, you can do all kinds of things. The challenge is, how do we maintain the strategic discipline and committed focus necessary to continue that struggle? And so I'm hopeful, but I'm also hopeful that leadership will emerge that will enable us to maintain the strategic focus necessary to get things done, to move this situation forward.
Dr. Edwards, you know, there are going to be a lot of people who are going to ask, what can I do now? Particularly people who happen to be white. You know, what kind of tangible, real-time steps can they make in order to address some of the things systematically that have continued to allow this disease to fester in our nation?
Well, you know, my phone just has just been lit up. Coaches, owners of franchises, white athletes, and so what can I do? And my advice has always been the same. It is much more important that you craft ways of dealing strategically with the racism, the sense of privilege and white supremacy in your community than it is that you stand with me dealing with the impact of that racism and white supremacy in mine. We have to, as one leader, black leader, said in the late 19th century, cast our buckets down where we are. And I'm absolutely elated to see all of these white people out in the street marching, holding up signs that Black Lives Matter, something that you that when this concept was first coined by three black women in 2012 following the acquittal of Trayvon Martin's murderer, you couldn't get white people to even say Black Lives Matter. Now they're out there holding up signs. I saw a police chief holding up a sign saying that Black Lives Matter. So, but that's great. And I'm elated at that camaraderie. I'm elated at that commitment. I'm elated that they're willing to put their bodies on the line, with other, peoples to, challenge this situation. But I'm also concerned now, what are you going to do when you go back home? And you're talking to grandmama, and you're talking to the next door neighbor, and you're talking to your sorority sisters, and you're talking to your pastor and your congregants in your church or your synagogue. What are you going to do then? Because that is where the problem is. What we see with George Floyd, what we saw with Emmett Till, what we saw with Mac Parker, what we saw with Tyrone Guyton in 1966 when police, a 12-year-old kid, was shot off of his bicycle in Oakland. What we saw with Bobby Hutton in 1967, one of the who was shot down by police, a 16-year-old kid, one of the things that sparked me to join the Black Panther Party, was the impact of the problem in our community. The problem exist in a white community. So my thing is, you have to figure out within the context of your community, of what is going on in your community, what you see in your community as a consequence of your eyes being opened in dealing with your black and Latino and Asian brothers and sisters out here on the line. When you go back home, what are you going to do? Because those are the results that are going to reverberate in my community. Not what you do standing alongside of me in terms of the protest effort, other than to say we're in this together.
Dr. Harry Edwards joining us here on The Morning Show. And Dr. Edwards, you used the phrase strategic discipline a minute ago. And is that the idea that needs to be implemented to talk about the protest component of this? Because we were talking about this earlier, and it seems like the coverage of what the media is talking about now has shifted from all of the reasons that we have what we have right now and is now more focused on the rioting and the looting and the destruction and the violence. Is that strategic discipline to make sure that we stay on the issue at hand at the beginning about George Floyd and everyone else that you mentioned?
Absolutely. I had a dream I remember the scene from the film Malcolm X that Spike Lee did, which reiterated a development that occurred in the early 1960s when Malcolm and these a whole bunch of brothers, about 100 Muslim brothers, surrounded the police station where another Muslim brother had been beaten up and dragged into a cell bleeding, and they just lined up across the street. They didn't go in. There were people screaming and hollering behind them to go in and tear him out and bring him out and so forth and so on. Malcolm stood there and he said, hey, no, we're going to be here until we get brother, find out that Brother Johnson is doing all right and that he's getting the medical service that he needs. And so, and then when the police chief finally capitulated and said, okay, we will send him to the hospital up the street, Malcolm went out, flicked his hand, those people marched away, and it scared the hell out of that police chief. That is disciplined, strategic discipline. It's a quick thrill to run amok and burn dumpsters and burn buildings and tear down fences and so forth and so on. But what you're doing under those circumstances is that you're building barriers rather than building bridges to resolve the situation. Suppose those 2,000 or 3,000 or 4,000 people who were in the street in Minneapolis had, instead of burning down District 3 Police Department, had simply stood shoulder to shoulder, blacks, whites, browns, Asians, everybody, men, women of all ages, stood shoulder to shoulder and periodically replaced each other and said, we're going to stand here until all four of those police officers are arrested and charged. They'd be standing out there now, but I'll tell you something else. The discipline involved would have created a focus on the problem of that was reflected in the death and the public execution of George Floyd that this country and the world would never have forgotten. And so at the end of the day, it's a quick thrill to run amok and to burn buildings and to loot and to rip off. And there may, you know, but it's futile. It's a fool's errand. And when you add into that the fact that you don't know who you're protesting with, one of the ways you find out who you're protesting with is to insist upon strategic discipline, upon enduring focus and so forth on the issue. And anybody who breaks ranks with that, it's obvious that they have a different agenda. We have foreign intervention. We know that when Cap was taking a knee at the 49ers in 2016, there were Russian bots who were inflaming the situation from abroad. We know that there are agent provocateurs who love to see nothing more than the disgrace and the dismantling of a disciplined protest with a focus on the issues in question. We know that there's a broad diversity of people out there. We don't know who they are, ranging from ultra-left anarchists to ultra-right agent provocateurs. So the one way you sort that out is not to try to get to know everybody personally and who's out there with you, but to set the marker down. We are involved in strategic discipline, and anybody who breaks rank with this has no business out here. And on top of it, we're going to work with the police to make sure that you're dragged off and taken out of here because you contradict the very mission that we're out here on. This is not a condemnation of the young people who get caught up in a mob psychology and so forth. It is an instruction from history that says this is the way that you handle that.
Dr. Edwards, as you yesterday, the chief of police in Minnesota basically condemned the other three officers in the Floyd case. They have yet to be arrested. They're able to sit at home and watch the news and eat and go to the refrigerator and do whatever it is that they want to do at this moment. Do you think if they go in and they arrest these people and charge them, that it will slow down the looting message and shift back to the protesting message?
It depends upon the process involved in getting that done. If going in and simply breaking a door down and arresting these people, pulling them away from the table where they're sitting down eating filet mignons and watching NBA reruns and so forth,
if you just break the door down and go in and drag them out. That is not the way the current system, as fouled up as it is, operates. And so whatever they do, until we can change the system, has to be within the context of the system. And I'll be perfectly honest with you. I'm not disappointed that they're still sitting out there. Because, again, it raises the contradictions that we're dealing with here. If there had been four black men or four black women who were engaged in a crime where somebody ended up dead, they would have had them in jail that next day. So the contradictions are heightened and made crystal clear and obvious by these three murderers being at home, eating, going to the bathroom whenever they get ready to, picking up the newspaper, watching their faces on television as George Floyd is being lynched in living color in prime time. And they're still out there walking around. So there's a system in place that has to be abided by to some degree simply in order to maintain the legitimacy of the process of getting these murderers behind bars. So I understand the situation. Should there be a system where they are behind bars already? Absolutely. But that's not the system we got. And this points out the extent to which we're not just talking about corrupt, maleficent, morally malignant and degenerate individuals who have winked at and passed on and set up conditions where this kind of thing could happen recurrently, not just over the decades, but over the generations. We're talking about a system that is seriously broken, but it's the system that we have now. And I'm waiting to see what within that system is going to allow the authorities in Minnesota and in Minneapolis to go in and drag these murderers out and bring them before the bar of justice.
Dr. Harry Edwards, Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Cal Berkeley, joining us here on The Morning Show. Dr. Edwards, thanks for your time this morning. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you very much. You brothers, stay safe. Stay well.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir.
All right. There's a lot there, guys, including his idea of how you change the system. Key, I know that you have some ideas on that as well as people that you would like to see in some positions of authority. We will get into that next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. So we just spoke with Dr. Harry Edwards, and Key, he mentioned, and it was the last topic that he touched on before we took our break, that about how to change the system and some people that he would like to see in some roles. And I know that that's something that you've mentioned a handful of times about, you know, whether it's police commissioners or mayors or governors or anybody that's in a power to make some of these decisions and appoint some people to these posts. Who would you like to see in there so they can start to address all the problems that we've been talking about for the last hour and 20 minutes?
You know, Travis, in certain police commissions across the United States, some are good, some are bad, right? They all are not bad. It's just depending on the makeup of them. And I think that when you look at the makeup of the police commissions, in part due to the mayor hiring the police chief who runs the police services and all the policemen, men and women in. If you make up that commission a certain way, it put bylaws in and rules in to enforce with the police officers things that make sense. You get people from the community. There's certain guys in the community of you know, you say you want high net worth individuals on these police commissions. There's people within the community that have a certain wealth and a certain educational background that's able to handle it. You know, you can have a billionaire on one or two of them if you want to, but take an athlete, take an entertainer, take somebody who's a school teacher, who or a doctor, a lawyer from that particular community, and put them on the commission. Allow them to voice their concerns within certain communities about certain police forces that may be around that particular community. You know, you take, for instance, where we here in L.A., the LAPD. You get somebody that is from these communities that understand the black and brown people within the community that also has a strong educational background. You say you want an athlete on there. You take a guy and you try and convince a guy like Magic Johnson to join the police commission, or LeBron James to join the police commission. And maybe there's an actor out there in Hollywood that wants to be a part of the police commission. And there's rules put into place. You know, if you do this, these are the consequences. This is what happens, that they know, just like professional sports, man. When you know that there's a fine, that you may break the rules, but you're going to severely pay a punishment for using steroids or using drugs or domestic violence. You're going to pay a price. And I think that that is a way that you send a certain message to the police. Not that I'm wearing this badge and I could do what I want to do, because clearly you see that police officer sitting there with his knee on George Floyd's neck and his hand in his pocket as if he didn't have a care in the world about what was getting ready to happen to him at all. But going in it to from my perspective, looking at it, going into it, if he knew that there was some consequences that was going to come up majorly to him, there's a chance that he wouldn't even, he'd have thought twice about something like that if he knows. And then you go one step further. If I'm in charge or I'm a part of the police commission, I figure out how to get these body cams to work out. Once you step outside that vehicle, that body cam now comes on automatically. And there's a control, there's a center, control center that they're being monitored. Just because when you think about it, if we could tap into Bluetooth on our phones in and out of our cars, and we could send video back to studios from the streets, live feeds, all, how come body cams can't do that? Live feeds back to a control center. So we're watching everything that you're doing. Make things stricter, harder for them to get away with certain things. And you say, well, it's going to cost millions and hundreds of millions of dollars. We spend, you killing up black folks out here left and right. You spending hundreds of millions of dollars in lawsuits. You spending up money. You spending up the taxpayers' money on that. So why wouldn't you invest in technology that would advance beyond this? I got to turn it on. It's broke. Oh, it didn't work. All of a sudden, LZ, somebody died and body cam don't work. Oh, we lost the footage. I'm only, it's pointing up to the sky. It wasn't pointing on to the person. It was on.
It fell off.
It fell off when I was running, chasing them.
Right. And listen, Key, you are 100% correct about that with the technology.
Wait, hold on. You can monitor somebody on an ankle bracelet every move they make when they get out of prison. You mean to tell me you can't do an automatic deal on a body cam?
And it's all about, you know, what you said, what you're willing to put your resources towards, what you're willing to do. I want to see us pull our resources towards a couple of things that can change the way that the police and the minority community interact. Number one, there needs to be a national database that if you are a police officer, you are registered to, and if you've been dismissed or had forced into resignation because of bad activity in one precinct, you don't get to scoot over three or four towns over and get rehired again. You don't get to do that. If we had a national database that if you messed up in one, you don't get another chance.
And that's so crazy that you said that. Because my kids asked me that either yesterday or Saturday, if this dude can get hired by another police force. And I said, you know, I don't think he's going to be able to, but who knows?
Well, guys, keep in mind, this is not unprecedented. This happens in other places as well, whether we're talking about clergy, where they move them from one place to another, or, you know, and this isn't a perfect comparison, but think, Key, when you were talking about the body cams, it reminded me of something, because even if we don't have the body cam situation like you're talking about, you know what else we do have? We have other people that are there. We have other people wearing that uniform that are there watching it happen. And it's like this stupid code that we talk about in Major League Baseball where no one's allowed to say anything about anything because now you're considered a snitch or a rat or you can't do anything. And baseball had their steroids thing go crazy and it damaged the sport. There are other people. They need to turn in the bad ones. They need to stop the bad ones. They need to make sure that, to your point, LZ, the bad one doesn't go down the road and get a different job with a different force. And it's like, well, you know, I'm not going to say anything bad about him because he's one of mine. He and I share a uniform. That there needs to be some accountability from the inside in the event that the body cam is pointed at this guy or the event he tries to go down the road and get a job with a different jurisdiction. They need to hold each other accountable for the bad ones. That way, those policing,
no question,
about the good ones, then you can say, okay, this guy is one of the good ones. This is one of the guys that we can say does have it in the right perspective because he wants that guy, the guy that's doing all this stuff that we're talking about, gone. But they all zip their lip and don't say anything.
And in terms of the vetting process of hiring, background, severe background checks and mental checks, psychology checks, all of those sort of things on a constant basis. You know, when pilots get hired, they have psychological tests frequently. Okay, they need to check in all the time. You need that with the police force as well. And then you say, well, I would say also, I know it's not a lot of police forces are all different depending on the area, so you're not going to get minorities in all of them. But the ones that do have a minority, I'd like to see them partnered up with each other. Okay, I want to see the white dude with a black car. I don't want to see two white dudes driving down the street, two black dudes driving down the street, two Mexican dudes driving down the street. Mix them up. Let me see them mixed up a little bit, because I can tell you right now, here in L.A., every time I see them, it's either two Hispanics together, two white dudes together, two black cops together. Mix it up a little bit.
All right, let's continue our conversation. Let's bring in some more voices too. Your voices, 877-710-ESPN. If you have thoughts on what we're talking about or your experience in the city over the last couple of days, plus, Jose, I want to hear what it was like for you yesterday downtown. That's all coming up, 877-710-ESPN on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Obviously, it's a confusing, scary, incredibly difficult time, anger rising in a lot of people for all of the obvious reasons. And LZ, you got a chance. You came in from Arizona yesterday. You got a chance to be downtown. What was it like down there? I know that, you know, you sent us some texts. You said it was tense, but peaceful.
It was definitely peaceful. You know, I started shooting some stuff with the LA Times. It's either posting now or soon will be. But I also was doing things on IGTV through my own account, because it's important that you see these images as well. It's important that you see what the protesters look like and what the signs say and where they're going and what's happening and, more importantly, what's not happening. So I made sure to post those images up as other images were being flooded through social media as well. And the thing that I was struck with over and over again was the diversity to what Key was talking about earlier in the crowd, and also the discipline that Dr. Harry Edwards was just talking about. They stayed disciplined. There were a handful, if that, of agitators within the groups that I was in. And I spent about 4 hours with these people, and I watched some of the agitators. They were trying to rile things up. They were trying to create an altercation between the peaceful protesters and the police. But I saw those protesters weed those people out, called them out, and told them to stop. They didn't sit back and allow the message to be hijacked by a very, very small few that was going to get a lot of attention. They didn't allow that. And so some of the beautiful things that I saw was the way that they took care of that, but also supported one another. You saw people saying, hey, I have extra water. Do you need some water? Because it was warm outside. As I said before, I spoke to a young woman who reached in her own pocket and paid for what I must have counted like 20 to 30 pizzas, cases and cases of water and other snacks for people because they knew they were going to be out there for hours and she just wanted to do something. She said she couldn't do the march, so she did that to support the protesters. I saw people who are, you know, higher age. I saw young kids. I saw trans people. And I saw gay people, openly gay people, marching side by side with cis brothers and sisters and straight brothers and sisters. I saw everybody. And I know that what gets the bulk of the attention right now is the looting that happened in places like, you know, Santa Monica and Beverly Hills. That is important to talk about as well. But if what we're really concerned about is not having this happen again, then we need to be focusing on the love that's being built and not just the negative few.
Let's try a phone call or two here. Obviously, everybody's feeling incredibly anxious in everything else that goes along with it. Let's start with Mo in Long Beach. Mo, you're first up on the Sprint People's Hotline. What's going on this morning?
Good morning, fellas. How you doing?
What's happening?
So real quick, I just want to touch on 2 points. First off, being T, man, I think you have a lot of great ideas as far as, you know, some improvements to the system. However, that requires transparency. Being a former athlete and a current college coach myself, I was just very upset by the lack of response by a lot of these D1 FBS coaches. I mean, a lot of them didn't have much to say. When they did say something, it was very, you know, generic and kind of a blanket statement over everything. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mo.
Yeah, it does require a lot of transparency, but it's a start. And it's a conversation, and that's the beginning of it. Now, whether or not we get to the end, who knows? But at the same time, you implement some of those things in with them also telling on themselves and their partners and letting people know that who they with. If you look at the situation in George Floyd, they stood by and watched that, you know, and I'm sitting there thinking of myself as I'm watching that, ain't no way in the world I'm going to sit there and allow that to happen. Yeah, if you throw him on the ground and you want to handcuff him and restrain him to a degree, but for 9 minutes you sit there with your knee on, and I'm just standing there on the sideline looking because he's a cop and a partner of mine. No. I'm not going to go down with you because you're doing something you shouldn't be doing. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen at all. And the chief of police for Minnesota simply said that there's at much fault as the individual actually pulled off the act. It's just like a robbery. It's just like anything else. If I'm in the car with you and I pull up to the subway and we rob it, I'm getting the same time as you. You might get a year more than me, but I'm going to jail too.
Let's try another one here. Let's go to Sherman Oaks this time. And Michael, you're on the Sprint People's Hotline. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. How y'all doing?
All good, right, man.
Good morning.
All right, so Travis, you were speaking about why police officers don't speak out. My uncle is a former CO at a correctional facility. And, mm-hmm. You know, I had this conversation with him over a year ago, and his answer to me was they have to rely on those other guys to be there for them when they are in times of, you know, need, where they need backup. So that's why they can't speak up, because they need them in moments where if they're in a stressful situation and they're calling for backup, those are the guys that are coming to be their backup. So they can't speak out, you know, like they would love to, but they need them as a part of their team. And, you know, you have the police commission where they, you know, their union, where they protect each other. It's just like, you know, us being, you know, African-Americans not having a snitch, you know, where we kind of tell ourselves not to snitch on each other. It's the same thing. So, you know, we have to get out of that mentality and start exposing people.
Yeah, I Michael, your point is a good one, that obviously if I'm relying on somebody to, for my own personal safety, you can't do what we were talking about. But I guess the larger point is this, is that if we make sure that those guys that would be offended or might not come to my aid, if we can get rid of those and find the right people, then we can clean it up. It's like anything else. I mean, you want to get rid of the bad and keep the good. I understand it's not easy, but my goodness, it just to like you were saying, Key, to stand by and watch something like that happen and do nothing is just inexplicable to me. We'll take some more calls. There's a lot of you on hold. We'll continue to go through those as well. That's coming up on the morning show on 710 ESPN. You know, Key, hearing you describe that, that's almost exactly what Harry Edwards suggested about an hour after, about the strategic discipline that to stay on message, to make sure that if it does start to result in broken windows and looting and fires, that you identify those people so they can be removed, so that strategic discipline takes hold. And the message that you're talking about people locked arm in arm and protesting and the signs and making their voices heard, that is what we're talking about, and not the fires and the busted glass.
And that's what LZ spoke to when he said a minute ago about being downtown and the protesters got rid of those people and told them, knock it off, get out of here, because you're tilting the message the way that they're looking for it to be, opposed to what you really came out here, or what we really came out here for, which was to protest, not to loot. You're not, you know, the interesting thing is when you look at a lot of the demonstrations and the protesting here, especially in Los Angeles, they're not protest. They're protesting at downtown LA, City Hall, the police, the freeway. But then all of a sudden it shifts to places like the Melrose. Ain't no protesting. That ain't nothing but looting. And you know that. We already know what that is. So for people to try to make it seem as though that's what's going on, that's really not what's going on. What's going on is the real protest and standing out in front of City Hall, saying whatever it is that you're saying, venting whatever frustrations you are that you're venting. You're trying to explain to the officers, trying to get them to listen, wanting your voice to be heard. That's protesting. Watching people in Utah, in Colorado, that's protesting. Seeing somebody, you know, protesting in the middle of Beverly Hills, that's cool and all, but we all would know what that's going to end up at. That's going to end up with a few people that's not in the right frame of mind in terms of the protest, but in the right frame of mind and figuring, okay, I'm going to hide behind this for a few hours, and in the moment that it breaks, I'm going to start to just demolish and destroy buildings and things of that nature. Now, the city of Beverly Hills wasn't going to allow them to take control like the city of Los Angeles. They wasn't just going to have them just destroying their properties. I remember back in 1992 as a kid, an 18-year-old kid myself, being a part of those 1992 riots and not, you know, I'm a kid, I'm from poverty, man. I'm from the inner city of LA. All I see is an opportunity to get some things. So not that I would ever condone such behavior as an adult now, but I also understand where those young kids are coming from and where maybe some of those adults that's out of work, don't have a whole lot coming from, feel like this is an opportunity, because I was once there at 18 years old. Now that I'm an adult, I clearly understand right from wrong. I didn't understand the message that was being sent in 1992, other than several white dudes beat up a black motorist for no reason at all, and everything was on video, but they got off and walked with a slap on the wrist. Or I didn't understand why in 1991, Latasha Harlings was gunned down by a Korean grocer because she thought she was stealing some orange juice, while that particular judge decided to only give her probation. And I think it was something like 500 hours of community service or something like that. I didn't know what that, you know, I'm a kid. I didn't really understand the volume of it, but I do as an adult. So I clearly understand why people are trying to take advantage of the situation. Now that I'm an adult and I understand it's not right and I wish they wouldn't do it, but I do understand why they're doing it. They're not doing it out of protest. They're doing it because it's available, hiding behind what the protest is.
Let's try another phone call here. Let's try Los Angeles and John. John, you are on the Sprint People's Hotline. Good morning.
How you doing, guys? Listen, hey, guys. every morning. I just want to let you guys know I appreciate your show. I love the fact that you guys are honest with everything you say. And I just wanted to share two viewpoints on what my experience has been with the LAPD in my lifetime here. Just a couple weeks ago, I don't know if you guys can you still hear me?
Not well, John. Why don't we try
clear.
This?
Why don't you try us back, man?
Yeah, call us back, John, and see if we can get a better line because I want to hear the story. In the meantime, let's try another one. Let's try Gardena this time and Manuel. Manuel, you're on the morning show. What's going on, Manuel?
Stella's, hey, man, I'm just glad. That's why you guys are the show of the people, man, because you guys do stuff like this. Dr. Harry Edwards, always an enlightening cat. You know, guys like me and Q grew up in L.A. We've seen this over and over. Guys like Ice-T and Ice Cube have warned about situations like this for like 30 years now, you know. Other guys from the East Coast, Public Enemy, X-Clan. There's been plenty of people that have been talking about this civil unrest that's brewing. I just pray that as a nation we could come together, man, because like he was saying, there's a bunch of knuckleheads trying to act like they're protesting that ain't about squat out here doing destruction, man. That's not what it's about. Rest in peace, George Floyd. Rest in peace, Philando Castile. Rest in peace, all people who have been brutalized by police. And respect to all the good cops. Keep up the good work, guys.
Thanks, Manuel.
And you know, Travis, this thing is, it's, you know, we're focused in on the police, but it's bigger than just the police. The police is a focus, but we got issues beyond the police. We got issues in sports, hiring practices, nepotism. It's bigger than just the police. The police is the focus right now because of what happened to George Floyd, right? I mean, that's the reality of where we at right now. But if you think about all of this before it happened, you think about young man gunned down in Georgia because he was looking at a house when several days earlier, it was multiple people that happened to be white walking through that particular vacant home that was under construction. You think about before that, we was talking about the hiring practices of the minorities in the NFL, in the Rooney rules, in the changing, and all of those sort of things because of the opportunity. There's no opportunity at the top. So everything is oppressed, has been oppressed for years. And now all of a sudden, we get this situation that we in, and we look in, and everybody is locking arms because it has allowed us to breathe a little bit, and it's okay. It's okay for that white person next to me to really hold arms with me now. Or it's okay for my black person to hold arms with that white person. But that should have been the case many years ago. It should be the case in professional sports. It's okay to hire a black general manager and a black president of a team because they too do know how to run stuff. But if you're not giving them the opportunity and a chance, you'll never know. You'll never, ever know.
Think about the way that we handle performing enhancement drugs in a sport like baseball. What happens when you get caught once now?
You get 50 games.
X number. Exactly. What happens if you get caught on a second time?
Double.
And then the third?
Gone.
Exactly. But we have police officers who are racking up 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 demerits because they have behaved improperly while on the job. Abuse of power, force. The guy that killed George Floyd, what do you have, like 15, 16, 17?
18 and 19 years.
So if with baseball, we recognize that, okay, this person's just a cheater and we don't want them in the sport. First time you made a mistake, okay, we get that. Second time you got seduced to fall back, okay, we get that. Third time, you know what? You don't have to stop, but you can't be with us. But where is that sort of approach or discipline when it comes to these bad police officers? So that we can alleviate the pressure, because I recognize and I understand the community that needs to be together in order to do the job that they have to do. So we can alleviate the pressure of cops, you know, calling out each other, but have a system in place so that when citizens are pointing this thing out about a particular person and they're investigated and it's found to be true, what you don't have happen is that person gets a week off and then you're back on the force and you can just do that over and over and over and over again until you're looking up like the cop that just killed this man in Minneapolis. That needs to be addressed. That has to change. That's the systematic stuff that we're talking about. We want to stop some of this from happening, the looting, the protesting, the deaths. We want to stop this. Make some systematic change that matter, that has some teeth. Get these bad cops off the force. Get them out. Get them out the profession.
Key, you saw something this weekend that you said moved you to tears. I want you to tell that story when we come back on the other side, plus more of your phone calls, 877-710-ESPN. That's all coming up on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.